Network, brought to you through WBAI New York. Extinction Rebellion Radio is hosted by Matthew Kearney and Ailey Slade.
Welcome to the Rebellion.
This is Extinction Rebellion Radio on Pacifica Radio Network, brought to you through WBAI New York. Extinction Rebellion is hosted by Matthew Kearney and Elise Lane. Extinction Rebellion is an international movement that uses nonviolent direct action to press for action on the climate emergency. You know, today we're talking about the climate in Europe. Europe is seeing the early versions of its environmental catastrophe. I'm sorry to say, it's only the early versions, and it's going to get worse from here. But let's review what's happening in Europe now.
Italy, especially the northern part of Italy, has had brutal heat for much of this summer. There are always some hot days in Italy in the summer, but this level of heat is starting a lot earlier than usual and lasting a lot longer than usual. It's making frequent headlines in Europe. This long, long heat wave in Italy is in the news a lot there. We may need to ditch terms like heat wave if it's getting to just be always as hot as a so-called heat wave. I mean, it's not a wave anymore if it's hot like that so often, you know? It's like, it's just the new state of temperature. A wave is something that comes and then passes. A wave builds and then it recedes. But if the weather lasts a couple of months, it's not a wave. Anyway, with all this heat, it's no surprise they have drought too. And it's bad. They're worried about running out of water, Elise. Italy's talking about running out of water.
That's amazing.
The mayor of Milan has prohibited washing cars and watering gardens. He's prohibited watering gardens because it wastes precious water. And check out this sentence from a BBC article. Quote, several other northern Italian cities have already begun rationing drinking water. Unquote. Listeners, are you hearing what's happening? They are rationing drinking water in Italy now. 2022.
Not 2050, right? 2022.
This is not some long-term projection, folks. This is happening right now, rationing drinking water. It's striking whenever there's a disaster, but why we wanted to focus on Europe and including Northern Italy today is to point out that a high level of economic development, high global cultural status does not save you from climate change disaster. You can be Milan, one of the biggest cities in a G7 economy, the global capital of high fashion, the place where Leonardo da Vinci did his most famous paintings, the place with the greatest fresco paintings of all time, world-famous architecture, great food, all this. The province that borders it is Emilia-Romagna, which has the densest network of cooperatives in the world going back to the Middle Ages. So this place, universally acknowledged to have an extraordinarily high level of economic and social and cultural development, not to put down anywhere else. I'm trying to make the point that you can have all this status, you can have all that, and have to ration your drinking water. None of those things save you from climate change. None of those things exempt you from this situation. It gets worse. The River Po is Italy's longest river. It has its source in the Alps, and it ends in the Adriatic Sea between Italy and Greece. This river was running low weeks ago. The government has declared a state of emergency over the water shortage caused by this river running dry. Multiple major news outlets report that in some places, the river right now is only a trickle. But it's not just running dry. And this, at least, this struck a chill down my spine. It's running salty.
Mm-mm-mm. Can't drink salty water.
Nor can plants drink salty water.
That's right.
I mean, we can't drink it, and plants can't drink it. Animals can't drink it. Seawater is seeping into the River Po, and it's destroying crops. I mean, I've read about the destroying crops. I suppose animals, too, they might come and lap at the river thinking that it's the same water, and it's not. They're getting salty water. I wonder what happens to those animals who drink from that river. But the crops are an awfully big one. An Italian hydrologist quoted in the BBC says salty seawater can be found, quote, a few kilometers inland in normal circumstances. But the flow pushes it down. I mean, the flow of the river under normal circumstances pushes that salty water down and keeps it out of the inland regions. And that's why we can grow crops inland, but usually we can't grow crops right by the ocean. Now they're detecting salt water 30 kilometers inland in the River Po. We should see about getting a hydrologist on the show, Elise, to explain what this means to us and help us understand if salt water in rivers is as big of a deal as I think it might be. Just how much salt are we talking about, and how much does it take to kill off the crops that supply our food? Does it destroy the soil forever or just for a year? Does it get into the groundwater? Can it be washed out if there's a big rainfall? I don't know the answers to these questions.
I don't either, but you know, I'm afraid of what the answers are.
We should try to find it out. I used to think that the worst thing in terms of water supply was the rivers running dry. But if they run salt water, that's probably worse because it would kill the crops and poison the soil.
And kill the animals that live in the fresh water.
Yes. When the crops are killed and when the animals are killed, the food supply for humans is gone. And when the food supply is gone, humans starve. This is happening for the River Po right now. Is it likely to happen elsewhere too as temperatures soar? If the rivers run with salt and kill off all the soil, then we could get soaring death rates a lot sooner than we thought we were going to get them because there won't be food. Now, listeners, deep breaths. I'm saying we need to hear from some water experts how bad it is, if this is really the case or not. I'm not screaming we're all going to die like Kate DiBiase in the movie Don't Look Up. Although I might get there. But the worry, though, is that these water changes nuke the food supply.
Can I say something, Matthew, here? You know, one of the things that it makes me think about whether or not there are, you know, sort of war games around what happens if, you know, folks in Europe, like in Italy, find that their food supply is running low and then start migrating. Do we have any war games around that? We certainly have war games around folks from the southern regions. But it strikes me that folks in Italy are going to have to move somewhere. If their water is not fresh and their land can't produce crops.
I almost hope, I don't know whether to say this, I don't know whether I hope that someone has this war gamed out or not. I almost hope that somebody somewhere has a plan, but I doubt that it's the case. I could easily easily believe that nobody actually has the plan.
Yeah. And the reason I thought about that is because the Navy recently did some climate change war games. And I thought, well, I wonder if they have Italy in their sights. And I doubt it because it's, you know, as you said, a developed country with all kinds of wonderful things. Mm. Anyway.
Yeah, to wrap up Italy for the moment, one third of the food produced in Italy is produced in the Po River Valley. That's the place that's now running salty. So sure, we can lament the loss of that wonderful, wonderful Italian food and wine. If you've spent much time in Italy, you know what I mean. But at this point, I don't think we should be worrying about the quality of the food. We have to worry about whether there's going to be food at all.
You are listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on Pacifica Radio Network, brought to you through WBAI New York. This is Elise Lane, and I'm here with Matthew Kearney, and we're talking about the heat wave and other climate crises in Europe. Now, in the UK, it's hot. It's the first time ever there has been a red warning for heat. This comes from the meteorology office. They have amber warnings and red warnings. And right now, middle of July 2022, it's a red warning for most of England. Now check out this list as we read off what a red warning means. Quote, the Met Office red warning means population-wide adverse health effects, not limited to those most vulnerable to extreme heat, leading to serious illness or danger to life. Now, let me pause for a minute. What that means, folks, is that even if you're fit and healthy, you could die from the heat. They use plainer language for the next point. Let me get back to the quote. Substantial changes in working practices and daily routines will be needed. A high risk of failure of heat-sensitive equipment, potentially leading to localized loss of power and other essential services. Now, let me pause again. That means that the stuff you need might not work, including air conditioning, electricity, maybe other things. I don't know about water. Certainly, transportation like trains and buses might shut down. It might be good if they specified a bit more, but the general idea is stuff is going to break.
Boy, I mean, makes you uncomfortable, right? Government saying, hey, all this basic stuff might not work.
That's right. And good luck. All right. So let's get back to quoting the list of red warnings. Quote, more people visiting coastal areas, lakes, and rivers, leading to an increased risk of water safety incidents. Delays on roads and road closures, along with delays and cancellations to rail and air travel, unquote. That's what happens when we get to the red warning level, which is where most of England is right now. So we should escape the Scotland, right? Far north, highlands must be a lot cooler, a lot better, but it's not so easy. Parts of Scotland are under an amber warning as well. That's the level below red. All of Wales is under an amber warning. What kinds of temperatures are we talking about here? Well, the highest temperature ever recorded in the United Kingdom was 101.7 degrees Fahrenheit, and that's 38.7 degrees Celsius in a long, long time ago called 2019. The Met Office is expecting that record to be broken, and not just by a little. It could get to 106 degrees Fahrenheit, which would be 41 degrees Celsius in England. In Scotland, temperatures are above 86 degrees Fahrenheit, and that's 30 degrees Celsius. Of course, because we just said 106, then 86 sounds pretty manageable compared to what's happening further south. But 86 degrees is not exactly a cool day.
Nope. It's not.
I'm in California, 86 degrees. You know, we get to 86 all the time, but it doesn't mean we're having a good time. We go to the beach. Now try working outside all day in that temperature and we can get a reality check here. This is Scotland, for goodness sakes. Now look at a map. Scotland is as far north as Scandinavia. It's on a level with Sweden and Norway. It's not supposed to be 86 degrees there with government issued amber warnings about power failures. But that's where we are right now, people. That's where we are.
Meanwhile, Southern Europe has it a lot worse. Large wildfires in Spain, Portugal, and France. In France, 4,000 hectares have burned already. In Portugal, it's 30,000 hectares. In Spain, it's 70,000 hectares. Now, I admit I had to look up how much was a hectare. Okay.
Yes.
I don't know if you remember that off the top of your head, Alicia.
No.
How much was a hectare? So okay, folks, here's how to think about hectares. New York City, all five boroughs, is about 78,500 hectares. Huge land area. Huge land print of all of New York City. So that's all the boroughs. So the amount of forest in Spain that has burned this year is almost the size of New York City. In Spain and Portugal combined, the amount of forest destroyed by fire is 1.4 New York cities so far. Is this normal for Spain? No, it's not. They certainly have forest fires from time to time, but not on this kind of scale. We're looking at twice the 10-year average, as in that's twice as much destruction as fires, even in recent years, and we're only halfway through the year. A rundown of temperatures in Spain is not pleasant. The city of Almonte recorded a temperature of 118 Fahrenheit. That's 45.6 degrees Celsius. I hurt just reading those numbers. If anybody is listening to this later on podcast from the archive, we're referring to mid-July 2022. These extreme temperatures are right through the whole country of Spain. Andalusia, Extremadura, Castilla, these are all provinces, and they're all seeing it get up above 105 degrees Fahrenheit, and that's 40 Celsius. In Badajoz, it's 113 Fahrenheit, that's 45 Celsius. Now, in the north of Spain, where it's supposed to be less oppressively hot, in fact, it's pretty much just as bad, and that's what has made this summer different from even summers in the past couple of years. Zaragoza is in the northeast, and it's 109 degrees Fahrenheit there, so 43 Celsius. In the northwest, in a place called the Miño Valley, 42 degrees Celsius, and that's 108 degrees Fahrenheit.
That's Vegas in the spring temperatures. You know, when we talk about these temperatures, we often give the highs. That's what usually gets reported. But it's almost more important to know what the lows are, because the lows tell you, does it really cool off at night, or does it stay hot all 24 hours and then stay hot for the next 24 hours and then the next 24 hours? Does it ever really cool down? Now, it turns out the human body can handle extreme heat up to a point, as long as it gets to cool off eventually. That's other animals as well. Think about that relief when you step into air conditioning from a hot day. And after being in the air conditioning for a while, you can handle the heat again. The expression cooling off captures this body adjustment. Or if it's super hot, you can almost feel energized after a cold shower. But when it does not get cool overnight, it wears on the body far, far more. For instance, in southern Britain right now, mid-July, the coolest it gets overnight is 77 degrees Fahrenheit. That's 25 degrees Celsius. And that's worse in Italy and Spain, but I just happen to have the British figures handy. Now, that sounds pretty good compared to all these 100 plus degree temperatures we've been quoting you. But this is not far off from 80 degrees. If that's the coolest it gets, that's the wee hours of the morning temperature, and that's not cool enough. The body does not recover fully when there's the overnight temperature. Deaths from heat waves come when the low is high, as in when the temperature stays warm or even hot through the night and the body doesn't cool off. This is true for animals too, as well as humans.
Absolutely. And if it's never getting really cool, in terms of temperature overnight, then we need some kind of technology to cool ourselves, air conditioning, cold water, some ice, even, you know, from the ice box, something. And those are exactly the things that fail when it gets ultra hot. The infrastructure breaks down. And so, man, we're in a bad situation.
Exactly.
Now to Portugal. The situation there blows my mind. Okay, the National Meteorology Service in Portugal has three different classifications of risk for fires. Basically risk, high risk, and exceptionally high risk. When they say, translating into English, when they say state of alert, that means there's a risk of fires. When they say state of contingency, that's worse. That means high risk for fires. And then there's the very worst, which is state of exceptionally high risk. Well, listeners, let's play a little game. How much of Portugal is currently under this worst level of exceptionally high risk for fires? What percentage of the land area of the country? 80% of the country is under exceptionally high risk for fires.
That's amazing.
Care to guess how much of the country is under a state of contingency? That's high risk. It's the entire country. 100% of mainland Portugal is under high risk of fires, every square inch of it, even the city of Lisbon. You might wonder, how is downtown Lisbon at risk of fires? Well, there are trees there and the wind could blow the embers into the city. So yes, even downtown Lisbon is at high risk of fires right now. In the Portuguese terminology, a state of contingency. Let that sink in. Let that blow your mind as it did mine. Portugal is not a tiny country. It's roughly the size of Indiana. A little bit bigger than Maine, a little bit smaller than Kentucky, just to give you some ballpark of how much land we're talking about here. The whole country.
The whole country. You know, the situation in Portugal is a great illustration of how our categories aren't making sense anymore. The label exceptionally high risk is now 80% of the country. So exceptionally high risk is not exceptional anymore. It's normal now. And if it's normal to be exceptional, then we need to revisit our definition of exceptional, right? Mm-hmm. And if the high risk category is the entire country, and we're not even using the state of alert category anymore, If the entire country is beyond a state of alert and into the next level, then the scale isn't right. Now, I'm sure it was the right scale at one time, that these labels were sensible at the time they were made, but these labels are not sensible anymore. And climate change has made a new world, a different planet, and we can't just apply our old categories to this new world. They don't fit. We have to rethink how we think if we want to keep up with the new world that's not like the old one, right? Mm-hmm. So one more thing on Portugal that will keep you up at night, and you know, especially if you're in Europe and you can't sleep anyway because of the heat. Of course, the one thing they need more than anything is rain, right? Rain is the single best firefighting tool. And obviously, northern Italy is crying for rain to make that river Po run fresh water once again. Well, here's the bad news. What meteorologists are saying is that right now, if it rains in Portugal, the rain would evaporate before hitting the ground. The rain would evaporate before hitting the ground. Let that sink in.
Goodness gracious.
When I read on climate transformations and I read people talking about Europe turning into a desert in the long term, I used to think that was crazy talk. Now, it doesn't sound so crazy anymore. More on all of this in future shows.
Yeah, I had the same reaction. Let's not fail to mention other great big fires elsewhere in Europe and near Europe. Back to France, where it's 102 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 39 Celsius. The number of people evacuated from the fires was 14,000, the last report I saw. But that's way up from just 2 days ago. In fact, since I wrote this segment and I have been proofreading it, I saw the number updated from 12,000 to 14,000 evacuees. So by the time you're listening to this, it might be a great deal more evacuees than that. So call this a minimum, 14,000 people evacuated in France from fires in just the last few days. There are wildfires in Turkey. 3,000 people had to be evacuated from the Dakka Peninsula in the southwestern part of Turkey. So kind of close to Greece. And guess what? Greece is burning too. Again, fires in Crete and Attica. Crete is the large island in the Mediterranean, and Attica is the peninsula that includes Athens. Forest fires in both of those places. A bit further into the continent, Croatia is having bad forest fires too. I saw a report in the BBC that in one spot, the fire and smoke got so oppressive that 8 people on the coast had to jump into the Adriatic Sea.
That's amazing.
They couldn't breathe on the land. The smoke was so intense, and they were going to die if they didn't jump into the water. Now, we know this story because these 8 people were rescued. You have to wonder how many weren't rescued.
Morocco is just a quick skip across the water from the southern tip of Spain. The Mediterranean is really just as wide as a big river there. And Morocco is seeing forest fires too. 3 different large forests are on fire in Morocco. Parts of Morocco are desert. The western edge of the Sahara is there, but parts of it are green and relatively lush, and those parts are disappearing. Moroccan officials said these fires are in hard-to-reach places, so they're hard to put out. A couple of quotes from some of the news coverage of these Morocco fires. Here we have, quote, scenes of raging infernos and plumes of thick smoke, end quote. Here's another one. Infernal-like scenes, end quote. 1,000 families so far have had to move. Of course, it would have been a lot more if it wasn't in such a remote area. Now, as for temperature, it was 113 degrees Fahrenheit, 45 degrees Celsius in Morocco last week, and they had a drought there for a long time.
You are listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on Pacifica Radio Network, brought to you through WBAI New York, hosted by Ailey Slane and Matthew Kearney. And we've been talking about the extreme heat and sweeping forest fires and rivers running dry and rivers running salty in Europe.
All of this is just within the past week as we're recording this show. We're not tallying fires from the past year. We're tallying fires from the past week. In the past week, the forest fires in all these places have been big enough to hit the news. To recap, France, Spain, Portugal, Morocco, Turkey, the island of Crete, mainland Greece, Italy, Croatia. The forests are burning up in all these countries. All of this, just in case you were wondering, is caused by humans burning fossil fuels. That's for you, Joe Manchin. That's where this heat is coming from. The sequence is pretty much the same wherever you are in the world. Severe heat brings drought. Drought brings fires. If this goes on for long enough, then desertification.
This has been Extinction Rebellion Radio.
Any reason is a good reason to give a vehicle to WBAI. Some do it to avoid the hassles of selling. Some like to skip the costs of repairing, while others just enjoy the good feelings of giving back to their community. But no matter your reason, donating a vehicle to WBAI is a great idea. And it's easy. Here's how it works. Simply call 866-WBAI-CAR. That's 866-922-4227. Or give online at WBAI.org/donate-your-car. Our vehicle donor support team will arrange your free pickup. When the driver arrives to tow away your great gift, you'll receive a donation receipt. Vehicle donations have the potential to drive hundreds and sometimes even thousands of dollars to WBAI. Call 866-WBAI-CAR or visit WBAI.org/donate-your-car.
Yeah, bunks on rungs.
Can't talk, got a beat in my headphones.
I'm Linda Perry, program director at WBAI, and I've got a beat in my headphones telling me to update you on phase two of our Tower Fund Drive. Tower Fund Drive, what's that? Oh, well, it's a push to raise the $17,000 a month needed to pay the space at Four Times Square, which houses WBAI's transmitter. Can't you get some grant or some large funder to take care of that so you don't need to ask listeners? Good question. But no, we are listener-sponsored and non-commercial, so that's why we come to you for support. Unless there is some big funder out there that we could approve of, that would be great. Anyway, where are we? We raised $125,000 in phase one of the Tower Fund Drive, and now phase two, that's what we're in, we raised another $35,000. So we're caught up with back rent until May of this year. Now we owe June and July. We always owe something. So we owe June and July. Our goal is to raise $17,000 by the end of July. Can you please help? And if you haven't donated before, can you donate now? Go to towerfund.wbai.org and contribute what you can. Or please go to 212-209-2950 and tell the call center you want to contribute to WBAI's Tower Fund in the name of your favorite program or in the name of all WBAI shows.
Extinction Rebellion Radio, heard Tuesdays at 6:30 p.m. right after the WBAI Evening News. Stay tuned for We Only Want the World with Sansara Taylor. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned.